Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guests to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Well, hello, friends. Thank you so much for coming back for yet another week. I mean, we've been doing this for quite a time, and you guys know you are my favorite podcast audience. It is going to be an incredible show today. It's going to be an incredible show today because, look, we're called Mission Accepted Media, and we talk to people that take the mission, risk the mission, stay on the mission, and all the things. And I always tell you that you are something, and it relates to the topic. And when I was sitting here thinking, so you're going to be talking with and listening to Jane Pilger, and Grr, because if you don't say her name right, she's going to get mad at you because of the way it's spelled. But anyways, we're going to listen to Jane, and I'm thinking, you know what? What could I tell my audience? And I was like, I had the pleasure of being on her show just a couple of days ago. Super fun, super great, super transparent. We got to it, you know, we got to it. And I thought, you are the bravest audience, because I have to say, when I think about Jane, I was like, what word do I want to say? I just think that she's so brave. And once you know her topic and what she's having a conversation about, you'll know exactly what I mean. Because a lot of times people just, they live two different lives. They don't, you know, they don't get brave with themselves. And we think about the life of an entrepreneur. We think of the life of someone who wants to take the mission. We think of the life of just us having this human experience. And a lot of times bravery is very external, right? Like, we can be brave in those moments. We can be brave to do something temporarily. But when you brave up in the way that Jane has, where she shares her story, not only maybe with, you know, her partner, best friend, and therapist, like, don't we all have a partner, best friend, and therapist? But she really, like, man, I was on her show and she shares it. So very impactful, very transparent. So today we are going to be talking to Jane, and Jane is an incredible author. She's wrote a very powerful book. I'm going to let her tell you about the book, the title of the book. And I think I always like to speak with authors in relationship to share, if you want, Jane, what took you to either the content of the book, like, what was it about the content? And then let's share with the, because how many people want to write a book? Apparently 97% of people would like to write a book, and 3% of people do. So it's one thing to be a speaker, right, and talk about it, and or podcast or YouTube. It's another thing when you put words in print. I think it gets people a little nervous. It's like, ooh, I hope no one finds my diary, you know? I know that's a lot of things that I just threw at you, but let's just kind of start with, welcome to Mission Accepted, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Deb. What an introduction. I was just sharing with Deb before we started recording that one of the things I know about, I've had a couple of really powerful conversations with Deb. And one of the things that is so clear to me when I talk to her is that she has such a strong connection with her intuition. And when a message or a calling comes through to her, she knows what it is. And so I didn't know the word she was going to use for me until you all heard it first, but I just knew, and I trusted, like, I know it's going to be amazing because I know your connection, Deb's connection to her intuition is so strong. And when she said that word brave, I was like, oh, yes, it really is very brave work. And it has been such a journey for me to really be ready and be open to talk about my own personal struggle with binge eating. I don't even think we said the words yet, but binge eating is what we're talking about. And it really is my mission. My mission is to help people understand why they binge eat and how to stop, how to overcome it. And what I know so deeply and so personally is how much shame there is for so many people around the subject of binge eating. It's like Deb was saying, it's like a double life. On the outside, right? It looks like, for me anyway, it looked like I had everything all together. People would say, oh, look at her. She's got it figured out. She's successful. All of these things on the outside. But on the inside, I really was kind of falling apart. I was eating in ways that I would be appalled if anybody ever saw. And I struggled with binge eating for over 25 years. And I really, my very first binge was my first semester in college. I don't remember the binge itself. I remember receiving a care package. I lived in a dorm room by myself. I remember receiving a care package. It was a box full of, it was in October, it was kind of Halloween and like semifinals time. And I received this care package and it was a box full of mini, like fun size candy bars. And I don't remember the binge itself, but what I do remember so clearly is sitting on the floor of my dorm room with that box, empty candy bar wrappers strewn all over the floor, all around me. I had eaten the entire box. And I was just like, what have I just done? And I was so ashamed and I was so appalled. And I was so determined, number one, that nobody would ever know. And number two, that I would never do it again. And so I tried all of these things to stop binge eating. But what I didn't realize were the very things I was doing to try to stop were the things that were kind of keeping me in the cycle in the first place. And I spent probably 3 years, I would say, trying to figure it out on my own, started seeking some therapy, continued trying to do these things to stop. And meanwhile, you know, really kind of reinforcing the patterns. And it was a long road. And while I was on this road, I remember so clearly saying, if I ever figure this out, I'm going to help other people so that other people don't have to go through the same amount of, you know, difficulty and challenge that I've gone through. And I mean, it was a journey. It was lots of books, podcasts, therapists, eating disorder specialists. I went through 2 rounds of intensive outpatient therapy at a local eating disorders treatment center here where I live. And all of the things. And I would have these like pockets of progress and periods of time where I wouldn't binge, and then it would come back. And so for me, it was kind of like just, it was a journey. It was a very long journey. And there were so many pieces of the puzzle. I think I needed every piece of that journey. And the biggest thing that really kind of put everything together for me in the end was really learning about the nervous system, learning about how to create and to cultivate safety and trust with myself, with my body, with food, things that I just really didn't have before. And through all of this, I really have come to see binges as lights on the dashboard. So many people see binge eating as itself is the problem. The binging is the problem. We've got to address the food. We've got to just change what we're eating, how much we're eating, when we're eating. But to me, the food itself isn't the problem. It's what's going on underneath the surface. So if a binge is the lights on the dashboard of the car, it tells us there's something going on. We need to get under the hood and see what's going on. What is causing these lights to come on in the first place? And so if we can do that, then I see that there are 8 primary reasons why people binge. So when those lights come on, when the binge is that, you know, the binge is the, it's the symptom, it's not the problem. The problem is one of the 8 reasons why people binge. And so I wrote this book. It's called The Binge Eating Breakthrough. It goes through the 8 reasons why you binge. Each reason has its corresponding solution. And then I also talk about the 4 pillars of creating peace with food, because to me, it's not just about the reasons and the solutions, but if we don't have these pillars, these foundational pieces, we're not going to get that food freedom, that peace with food, that calm, connected, and confident relationship with food that so many of us are just craving. And those 4 pillars are clarity, connection, compassion, and confidence. So in this book, I talk about the 8 reasons. I talk about the 4 pillars. I kind of put it all together. And the subtitle of this book is Why Food Isn't the Problem and What Really Is. So the 8 reasons and the 4 pillars, they all come first. And then in the back of the book, we talk about food, because yes, food is important. And yes, what you eat does have a very big impact on a lot of things. But if we just start with the food, we're not addressing the root cause, what's really, really happening underneath the surface.
Wow. Well, that was very thorough and important. And first of all, thank you for sharing your story. And that's what I said about Brave. I mean, it's transparency. And we talked about this the other day about how there's a lot of shame about when people do anything in secret. Right. I mean, whether it's binge eating or particularly if it's addictive or they're doing something that's out of their own control.
Yes.
Because the shame and the control factor is very important because they're ashamed. They're ashamed, not just because of the activity, but they're ashamed because they can't control the activity.
Yes.
And that's the thing with an addiction or what have you, if you want to call it a food addiction or that relationship to being out of control as a form of addiction. And the difficult thing with food, one of the difficult things about food compared to a substance that you can live without, you know, some people have addictions in different areas or coping mechanisms in different areas. And, you know, commonly known like drugs or alcohol or shopping or something that's compulsive. Food, you need to get into a relationship with in a very different way because it's not something that you can just cut it out. Like, I no longer drink or I no longer smoke or... you know, I restrict myself from shopping or whatever it is, right? The relationship with food, I think that's where a lot of time, like that test in time comes in, where yeah. People have to find what their relationship is and how that works for them. So it's complex. It's really quite interesting that you talk about that it took 25 years and each piece was part of the puzzle. And then you said something that kind of was surprising to me. You were like, I found that it had something to do with my nervous system.
Yeah.
And so people would not necessarily put binge eating, challenges with food and all the things. They might go, oh, childhood therapy is needed or, you know, but nervous system, can you explain that a little bit? Because that's not a normal put together.
Yeah, absolutely. So often what happens, I teach the nervous system in a very just very simplified, very easy to understand way. So these days, many people are talking about the nervous system. I'm sure most of the people who are listening have heard about, you know, the fight or flight response or the freeze response. And the way that I kind of talk about it is we have our, when we're grounded, when we are feeling safe in our nervous system, I like to call that home base. Some people will call it, Dan Siegel called it the window of tolerance. It's where we can tolerate a certain amount of distress. We can kind of tolerate being with some level of emotion. So our window of tolerance, I like to call this home base. It's where you feel like you are at home in yourself. So home base, then we have the fight or flight response is when we have extra energy in our nervous system. So it may be when you're feeling really overwhelmed, when you're feeling angry, when you're feeling there's kind of like that buzzy energy that feels like it needs to go somewhere and do something. I call that above home base. Then we have the freeze response. So this is below home base. This is where it's like, it feels hopeless. You feel depressed. You have a hard time getting out of bed or off the couch. You're just scrolling the internet, whatever it is. So I like to think about it as the amount of energy that's in your nervous system. So either I have way too much energy up above, I'm either grounded, I'm in home base, which is where I can take action, I can make progress towards my goals, or I'm below home base and like I can't really get myself to do anything. And so what happens with food? So here's the connection with food. So that just is the nervous system in a very simplified space. So what happens with food is that when we have this excess energy, it's pretty clear it's excess. We can feel it, right? It's like, oh, I have all of this energy in my body. What we need is to drain that energy. And we often discover sometimes through, I literally have memories of myself as a young child eating spoonfuls of brown sugar in the pantry. So we discover that food can help calm that excess energy. And it does. It mm-hmm. does help to kind of bring that down. Now, what happens, especially with binge eating, is that we start eating, most people start eating from this place of above. And then we keep eating. And so, yes, we go down kind of into home base and then we just keep going. Now we're below. So for me, I used to live this life where I was just constantly go, 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 do, do, do. I would not ever stop. The only time I stopped was after a binge. I would be on the couch. I would be scrolling. I would be trying to figure out how to stop binging. But it literally was the only time I allowed myself to slow down. And so as I really kind of got to learn about this and got to see my own patterns, I was like, oh, isn't that fascinating? The body will always, if we don't listen to our body, if we don't communicate with our body, the body will get what it needs. If we don't feed ourselves, the body will ultimately respond through a binge. If we don't allow ourselves to rest, the body will get that rest through getting sick, through whatever means it has to get what it needs. And so that's kind of the way that we end up utilizing food to kind of try to respond to the various states of our nervous system. And then what can happen is we get down below. So now I'm below home base. I'm in this kind of like hopeless, helpless state. And there's a lot of, there may be shame, there may be hopelessness. And then the brain is kind of like, oh, I know what will make us feel better. If we eat this food to get this kind of like short-term quick burst of feeling better, then, and then we kind of start eating again. So we kind of end up in this cycle that just keeps us on the path.
Wow. Thank you for explaining that, because it wasn't an automatic put together.
Yeah.
So for your life, in terms of, you know, 25 years is a long time mm-hmm. to have something going on, and people in your life, they knew, didn't know, like, at what point? I mean, I think you were partnered and yes. someone, you know, so share a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So because there's people out there right now, no one knows.
That's right. That's right. It's amazing to me. I have a lot of clients who literally have never told anybody. They may be married, they may have children, and they literally have told nobody. So if that is you, just know you are not alone at all. My husband and I were married probably somewhere between 1 and 2 years before I told him. I was struggling pretty intensely before we met. And then shortly after we met, I was in love. So the binging really kind of tampered down quite a bit. And then we were getting married and everything was great. And I was so focused on all of the wedding and everything else. Shortly after we got married, it really returned. And it was probably, I don't know, 9 months or so that it really ramped up. I was seeing an eating disorders therapist. And at this point, I had told not a soul in my life, nobody. And she, except for the therapist, and she convinced me over time, she convinced me to open up to some safe people. And I remember that conversation, that very first conversation with my husband. I was convinced that he would not love me. I was so filled with shame. I could not even look at him. We were upstairs in our bedroom and I was laying on the bed on my back. I had my arm over my eyes. My eyes were like in the elbow of my, you know, the inside of my elbow, because I could not look at him. I was so convinced that he wouldn't love me. And he received me with such kindness and with such gentleness. And I mean, we're still married, 24, I think this is 24 years later. So, we're, you know, obviously, spoiler alert, he does still love me. spoiler alert, we're okay. But it was such a challenging conversation for me to have. And I think literally every conversation that I had, whether it was then my friends, when I first told my parents, these were challenging, challenging conversations to have. But every conversation that I had and every time that I was able to talk about it, what it did was it helped release a little bit of the shame. And when we can get past, so the number one reason, so we, you know, I talked about those 8 reasons why we binge. The number one reason is shame and judgment. And when we're in shame and judgment about what we've done, it's like we can't even get under the hood to actually see what else is going on. I consider shame and judgment, it's like the 50-pound weight that's on top of the hood. And we can't even get under the hood to see what else is going on if shame and judgment are there, because it just keeps us, shame wants us to hide. It keeps us in the cycle. We beat ourselves up, everything else. And so being able to talk to somebody, whether it is a partner, whether it's a friend, whether it is a helping professional who you know will be able to meet you in a way that isn't going to increase the shame or the judgment, because that is a risk when you're talking to somebody who simply doesn't understand. But every conversation that I had helped to release a little bit of the shame. And with that, then you can really start to look at what is going on, what is happening under the hood, what else needs to be addressed, what else needs to be taken care of. But that shame and judgment will just prevent us from any awareness or understanding of the behavior, which is what we have to have in order to be able to change it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Because I think, again, when we talked about, you know, having to have a healthy relationship with something that's been a dysfunctional relationship, I mean, it's a relationship, right? It's kind of like having an unhealthy relationship, maybe with a family member, and going, okay, I got to put you here, whether we like it or not. And we need to work through this relationship so we can be healthy. Because it's a form of sustaining for the body.
Yeah. You know, now, it's interesting. I just to add on that really quick, yeah, I've been talking to several clients about sometimes it's like, we don't want to look at something. I don't want to look at it because either I'm afraid of what I might see, or I was literally talking to a client earlier today and she was saying, you know, it's almost like I didn't want to see it because of how I would respond to myself. If I saw that thing, if I was able to kind of actually see what was going on, I probably would be so mean to myself that then it's like, I don't want to look. And this does kind of goes then into that safety piece. It's not safe for me to see kind of things about myself I don't like, because when I see them, I meet myself with such shame, with the internal dialogue, with all that negativity, then no, I'm just going to stay away from that. I'm going to kind of put my head in the sand and pretend like it's not there, or refuse to look at it because of how I might respond to myself when I see it.
Well, exactly. And if I see something and I'm uncomfortable, or I'm in feelings I'm not used to, or I start to not numb, that actually literally could be concerning for someone to trigger off
Yes.
eating dysfunctionally, because that's a coping mechanism when things aren't comfortable or whatever, right? So
yes.
I could see how that would be even more fearful, I guess would be the accurate term of when you meet yourself. It's one thing to meet yourself, but then if you are used to being dysfunctional in relationship to that, that's dysfunctional meaning not being well to yourself,
yes.
then food could then be, especially if you're in a place where you've kind of got a handle on things for a while and you're starting to do some therapy, and then you're like, oh, if I go any further, maybe I'm not going to be doing so well.
Yes. Yes. So this is one of the things I really talk about. I talk about it in the book too, is how do you look at yourself? What is the perspective? So I like to use this visual. If I'm looking at myself, I'm looking at my behaviors, I just ate a whole lot of food, I can really look at myself through two different lenses. So what people generally do, and I use these glasses to kind of reflect the lenses. So people usually look at themselves, these are like flames.
Yeah.
So this is like, they look at themselves through the lens of judgment. Through, why did I do this? I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. I'll never figure this out. You're awful. I can't believe you did it again. You know better. You should do better. All of that comes from here, which creates that shame and that judgment, which just keeps us in the cycle. But we can, with the same amount of food eaten, this exact same experience with food, we can choose to put on these glasses from the lens of love. And then we can get curious. How does this make sense? What else was going on? What did I really need at the time? If I had a do-over, what would I do differently? There's so many, what can I learn from this? Where is the treasure in this? We really can, depending on which lenses we look through, create an entirely different experience for ourselves.
So good. And so good. And so for our listeners and not viewers, what she did, what Jane did, is have a pair of sunglasses on that were flames, right? And that was that judgment piece. And then you had these, and they were red. And then you had these super cool blue hippie. I love those glasses. I want a
yes.
pair. That were hearts, right? And it was just how you're seeing yourself through two different lenses. That's really, that's very, very cool. Let's talk a little bit about the authoring part, because you have this experience, you talk about it in your therapist, you share it with your safe people, you know, whether it's authoring something that's super personal like this, or someone said something that they've overcome. And I know, talking to the world of authors, sometimes people are like, I'm going to put it in a different name. Should I do it in my name? What's my family going to think? What's my friends going to think? People don't know this about me. Oh my gosh, what if they see it? It's got my name. It's in a bookstore, you know, all of that. So what was the process that you went through for those out there? Because we talk about, you know, we're mission accepted and people take the mission, and there's risks, right? There's some risks being an entrepreneur. There's some places that people just go, "Woo, this is a little bit close to the cliff for me."
Yeah.
I would imagine, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, but putting your words on paper, what was the process that you went through to brave up to be able to do something like that?
It's such a good question. And I would almost answer the question to really hone in on the bravery and the challenge, really, of expressing myself and sharing my story in a much bigger way than I ever had before. I would really back up to when I started becoming a coach, and I started really putting myself out there in terms of my story, talking more about my story. When I first created a website, I had a really hard time. And I thought, this was actually before I learned about the nervous system. And so I had this great period of, you know, not binging. I think I figured it out. I want to do this work. And then now I'm going to go help people with binge eating. And I put myself out there, and I have this website, and I'm talking about it. And so much was coming up for me around, I didn't know what was happening at the time, but it was for sure my nervous system and this vulnerability of other, like, now anybody can find out. It's not just my curated safe people. It's now anybody can, you know, kind of tune in and listen to the story. And it brought up a lot. And so now, and my binging returned. And so here I am trying to help other people with binge eating while I'm binging myself, not like I was, but there was still binging happening. Then that brought its own whole nature of things. And I have come to learn, I just want to speak to anybody who may be listening right now, who is a helping professional, who is struggling with the very thing they are helping with. I want you to know, number one, you are not alone. There is, many of us are called to help in the area where we have had pain. And sometimes there still are levels of pain there, but there's this perception, well, I need to have it all 100% figured out, and I need to be perfect and, like, have that pain completely eradicated and 100% gone in order to be able to help somebody. And I really, really struggled with that. And there was a period of time I was like, I can't do this. This is too much. I have all my own food stuff, and I'm talking to people about food stuff, and it's too much food. And that really sent me on a whole nother level of learning about the nervous system and kind of like the next levels of safety and trust. So again, that was a piece of the puzzle I really needed, but man, I wish somebody would have told me about the things that come up when you do put yourself out there, in any way, you know? So that was a huge piece. Then I started my podcast. So there was kind of like another next level of that in terms of sharing stories. And I think with the podcast, I pretty quickly got very positive feedback from the podcast, and from people would contact me and say, oh my gosh, I don't feel alone. I really resonate with what you're saying. What you're saying is helping me so much. And so I think because of that feedback, it was very, it was easier for me, but it would not have been had I not had, you know, those other stepping stones. Then comes the book. So I have wanted to write a book for a long time. I ended up writing this book with a group, through, you know, kind of a small group kind of coaching program to write a book. And it was challenging for sure. And I will say the one of the reasons and one of the ways that I got it out into the world when I did is that through this book program, there was kind of like a bonus that if you got it done by a certain deadline, the coach was going to, it was through Rich Litvin. He was going to pick a handful to highlight and send out to his audience. And I thought, oh my gosh, what an opportunity. Like that would be incredible. And so I really utilized that deadline as a kind of like as a milestone for me. And there was a lot of I can't do it, there's not enough time, there's no way, but I was really able to kind of work through my stuff because I kind of had this, you know, kind of mission and vision of being highlighted in this email, which happened in December of 2024. So I was able to get it done. I was one of the featured books, and I will tell you that being in that group, having that like this is the deadline. You got to get it done by here. Helped me get through my stuff. I honestly don't know. I probably would still be quote unquote writing the book
yes.
right now had I not had that, you know, that kind of external push to help me get past that resistance because this is here, you know, it's the words are here. So yeah,
the words are here. There's a couple of things that you said. So first of all, congratulations. And second, I think that I you know, him giving a deadline and there's a carrot, that's perfect. Yes. Do you know what I mean? I mean, sometimes we have to, I go through this when people come to classes and there's other classes to go to. And I'm not the person that likes to send people run into the back of the room with a FOMO offer. I just like, I'm not, but I tell people, I'm not going to send you to the back of the room and tell you that this ends in 10 minutes and start the clock and all that thing, because it just doesn't fit right for me, because I know that if you want to come in the class and we can't get you in this one, we'll get you next month. Right. So I have to be authentic in that. But I do say to people, the reason why people do that is so it bypasses the crap in your head. So that somehow you knowing you're going to have the prize, or there's only 10 left, or there's only this many spots, or this whole limited seating and all of that stuff is actually just to push you past the crap that's going on in your head. So it overrides all of your prefrontal cortex negativity stuff, the hold back. Yep. And so I love that you put yourself in that. I remember when I was taking my massage class and she was like, okay, so when people do their exams, you have to do your exams within 2 weeks. I go, I'll take the first spot. Just give me the first spot, the first day, the first spot. She's like, okay. And then I got ready for that because I wanted to give myself, you know, and yay, you know, yay you. So I think it's a great inner tool to work when you know. And if you need to do it in group, then do it in group. And it's, I mean, I love that.
What was really powerful about this group, there were several people who had written a book who kind of, you know, gave their interviews and they talked about it, what it was like for them. 100% of them talked about how challenging it was. There was just a lot of transparency about what comes up for you in writing a book. Did you, I mean, is that something that you've experienced with all of your books, or what was your personal experience?
Well, some of them, yes. And some of them, not as much, but there's always, no matter whether it's like, you know, the book that we just did, 262, it's 2 pages and people are like, oh, no big deal. I talked to a woman today who just put a book together for 22 people. And she's like, I'm stuck. She goes, I just keep going over in my head. I had Carmel take a look at it a couple times. I had came up with 2. Carmel's like, you need to decide. I was like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, it's so funny. She's just compiled 22 entrepreneurs in a book that I'm in about spiritual intuition, how to use your intuition for the success of your business. So I'm like, I go, well, isn't that funny? Because there is something about if you're going to put something personal, no matter where it is, no matter what it is. I mean, I think when you're giving advice, like if I'm writing about how to use your intuition and I'm talking about how it went on for me, there's a piece of your personality that goes there and you want to make sure that the words are right and all the things. And you're looking for that having a really successful impact. But there can be things where, you know, you go through, do I share that or do I share this? Mm-hmm. What do people think? I wrote in a book, Resilient. It's called Resilient AF. And super cool compiler, her name's Blair Kaplan. And I decided for the first time to share about something that was super personal that I didn't want to share until both my kids were old enough. So my son turned 21. I'm like, I'm going to have to tell him if I put it in this book. And this is the thing. So I went through this inner dialogue. Is my son ready? Is it ready? Am I, you know, and all the things before I decided. And then you're like, what do I share? How far do I go? How big do I tell this story? You know, I could tell a story, or I could tell the story. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, so everything that I've written has always been, okay, let's keep it within a certain word count. Let's keep it. So that also helps, because you decide what to share and not what to share. I do think that you go through a personal journey. I do think that you have questions, and I do think that you come up against, this is in print.
Yeah.
This is in print.
And as humans, we're all going to have the, what are other people going to think?
Yeah.
I mean, we just, as that's what we do as humans. And even though we know we can't control and people are going to think whatever they're going to think, it is going to be a consideration. And so, you know, it's how we respond. It's how we learn to respond to ourselves instead of like just ignoring or pretending like we don't care, because we do, mm-hmm. but then shifting that focus to what really matters here is, and this is what helped me keep going with the book, is what really matters here is somebody out there needs this message. Mm-hmm. Somebody out there will be impacted by these words. And that's why I'm writing it. I'm not writing it so that somebody will have a positive or a negative opinion of me. I'm writing it so that it can be helpful. It can be a resource. It can be, I really wanted it to be the book I wish I had when I was struggling most.
No, absolutely. And I think for a lot of people, that's it for a lot of people. And it's really not Hallmark. It's really true. Yeah. Like, it's the yeah. truth. It's not like, well, if this helps one person, then I know I've done a good thing. Like, people, when they say that, they really truly mean it, because yes. the back process on it is not necessarily as easy as what it looks like. Oh, I wrote about this. Or even when people write an article, or they do they're on someone's podcast, or they release information that is more personal, because more than ever, I think even with the world of social and how people can misconstrue things and all the things, that people are very cautious about what they say and how much they say about it. So yeah. When I was talking earlier about introducing you to someone brave, I mean, Jane, that, I mean, first of all, brave because of the work you choose, brave because you put it in on paper, brave because you had to brave up and tell people beyond yourself and the confines of your own mind. And then honestly, how many practitioners would sit there and go, oh, the thing that I'm teaching people about, I'm struggling with right now, right? It's kind of like an anger management teacher going home and screaming and doing road rage. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So there's a lot of brave up that you do. And gosh, I would love to continue on because I feel like we could talk forever. We've been doing that. Good. The one thing that you said that I really want to highlight is when someone sees someone braving up, and I think it's important because a lot of our listeners are those people that are braving up. They're on their mission. They're doing their mission. They're hanging out with people that do mission. And when you were saying that someone was like, hey, this really helped me, I don't think until you have that experience come back to you, you realize how important it is. I mean, the best analogy that pops up into my head was the first marathon I ever did. And it was a rock and roll marathon, and it was in Hawaii, Waikiki. And I never realized till my first marathon how important it was that there was music the whole way through, because it just, for me, it just vibed me up and it got me through to the next piece of music. Right. I always wanted to do the rock and roll marathon because I was just like, it's
They do such a good job. Yep.
And, but when people are in what I call the stretch to significance, which is absolutely literally what I believe that you've done and are doing, I think that those are really important. Like, I don't think people realize how a card or a sticky or a gift in the mail or words or really sincerely, I want to tell you that it's thanked. I was in the stretch of doing, you know, we did 22 summits in 15 months. It was a little, you know, it was a little cray cray. And some woman had sent me her book, because if you send me my book, I'll do a shout out for you and all good. And like, hey, you know, and in the book, she just had a sticky, you know, thank you for what you're doing for us. And you know, da 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 da. That sticky, I stuck, it just sat in my kitchen on my, I bet you a year and a half. And I don't know why those 10 words on that sticky was what made me feel fueled again, but it did. So I always wanted to say, don't ever think that someone's heard thank you enough, or you're brave enough, or, you know, it's really important.
It really is. And I think especially if you are listening to this podcast and you are a podcast listener and you think, you may be like me. I listen to a lot of podcasts. How many podcasts do I actually stop and either go put a review or reach out to if I heard an interview that I was like, oh, wow, I heard this thing. That was so great. That was so impactful. I might say it to friends. I might even share the podcast with somebody else. But just letting somebody else know that their work has impacted you in some way literally could be life-changing. I mean, if they could hear that on a day that feels like nothing is working or whatever it is, like those words really do matter.
Oh, absolutely. I think I'm going to incorporate that even more and more. As we wrap up and we're going to kind of shift things here, I want to thank you for sharing what you shared. But also, we're kind of big believers in music over here. We love music. We love the vibe. We like the gig. And we always love to ask the our participants, our the people that are teaching, receiving and on the show, if you were to go to a desert island, and you've got one suitcase and you're going to be there for a while. Who knows? Maybe you're like, this is my vacay for life, right? I'm going to check out and do my show from, this island, which we will put in the show notes because you too have a podcast where people can come like you've talked about. But you're on your way. You're going to go have some fun, relax and chill out. And in your suitcase, you have room for one album. It can be, just one. So one song, it can't be a greatest hits. So who's the singer? Who's the song? What's the album? What is it that you just could not imagine not listening to for the rest of your days?
Oh my goodness, that is such a good question. That is such a good question. The first artist that comes to me is Dave Matthews, the Dave Matthews Band, which is so funny that he's what that his band is who comes to me. Short little quick story. He was actually in town playing in locally the night that my husband and I got married. And he was staying, his band was staying at the hotel where we got married. And several of my bridesmaids actually met him and got his autograph because they were like stalking him in the hotel. I found out all of this the next day. But Dave Matthews and oh, but is the specific song?
If you can remember it, and if not, Dave Matthews is fine. If
I
there's a
would just say, I'm just gonna, it's just gonna have to be a Dave Matthews album. Yeah.
okay, it's a Dave
Yeah.
Matthews film. All right. Well, look, thank you so much. I'm going to talk to the audience a little bit. Look, I know that there's many of you out there that are kind of doing the deal, and you have something that you're doing, and it's mission-based, and you're excited about it, and you want to get the word out about it, and you want to talk about it, or you have something that you want to share. It could be a profit, a nonprofit, what have you. But if you are on that journey of, you accepted the mission, and there's anything about accepting it all the way to where you are today, I'd love to see you. I'd love to see you sharing that. Exactly what we're doing here today with Jane. So if you want to be on the show, please reach out. And for those of you that like to step up a little bigger and a little bolder, and you want to brave up even more so, and you want to come on to the stages that we have 220 speaking spots that we do a year where you can share 2, 3, or 4 minutes if that's kind of where you're at and that's where your comfort level is. Or if you want to go all the way into a full feature spot and share for 20 minutes something that's super important to you, or you want to come onto the women's channel. Maybe you want to have your own show. Maybe you want to have your own talk show. Maybe you want to just participate and play with us on that channel. But whatever you want to do, we're here for you. We also do group podcasts. So some people love to do group podcasts because they're super fun. We've got a title of a coach or people that help people make money, or it's authors or people in intuitive businesses. And it's really fun to interact and just support the sector that you are in. So if you want to do something like that, we're not difficult to find. There's a website called devdrummond.com. It happens to be my name. So it's super easy. But if you want to be here, we'd love to have a conversation with you and help you get the word out as well. Jane, thank you so much for sharing, being transparent. Thank you for, again, we will put everything about your book and get all the links to in the show notes so people can access the book and access whatever that you have going on right now. So we so appreciate that. And with that being said, as always, audience, we can't wait to see you next week. And until we do, you stay well and you be groovy.